You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 1st of December 2025 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we have another positive news story to start the week off with, just like we did last week, and once again it comes from the Trump administration. Now, I'm well aware that there are all sorts of other negative things that the Trump administration are involved in, such as support for Israel or making plans to attack Venezuela. But they also do good things, as I pointed out last week. Now, this week we have another announcement, and this actually comes from one of Trump's top counselors, Stephen Miller. And I'm getting this news article from Breitbart, and it's headlined, "Migration Imports Societies, Not Individuals." And this is something that we as nationalists have been saying for years, that we cannot just look at the people that come over here as individuals. They are a part of a society, they are a part of their culture, and they will bring that society and that culture into whatever country they go to. As soon as there are a number of them there, they're going to group together, and the way they behave will reflect the culture that they have created. That's why it's their culture. They created it. Wherever you put them, they will create the same culture because it's unique to them. It's the same with Europeans. Wherever you put Europeans, we will create the same kind of culture that we have within Europe, following the same religions, following the same style of building houses, same style of music, same style of education. All these things that we have in Europe, we have because we are European. They don't just come out of nowhere. They come from within ourselves as a group, as a united group, like a group mind kind of thing. And that's what's being referred to here. President Trump and his advisors say mass migration imports cultures and societies, but Democrat partisans insist that all migrants must be treated as autonomous individuals, complete with all the legal protections held by Americans facing court trials. And of course, if you say, well, you shouldn't just be looking at somebody as an individual, you should also be looking at the group from which they are from, you open yourself up to charges of being racist, because then you're saying, oh, they're all the same, aren't they? And that's not what you're saying. What you're saying is that they are more likely to behave as a group than as an individual. They're more likely to do the things that their group statistics tell us that their group is more likely to do, then as an individual, they are more likely to do those things. This is the great lie of mass migration, Stephen Miller, a top counselor to President Donald Trump, said shortly after a supposedly vetted Afghan migrant shot two National Guard soldiers in Washington, D.C. And this is all in the news at the moment because of this. And Donald Trump has said that he's putting a permanent pause on migration from third world countries. And both of those words do actually cancel each other out. If you're pausing something, it means you're going to start again. And if you're permanently doing something, then it's permanent, isn't it? So I think Trump could have chosen his words a little bit better. Or did he choose those words deliberately so that in the future he can unpause the migration, and perhaps this will only last for a week or so, and it's just being done because of this atrocity that took place. But Stephen Miller said, "You are not just importing individuals, you are importing societies. No magic transformation occurs when failed states cross borders. At scale, migrants and their descendants recreate the conditions and the terrors of their broken homelands." And it's interesting what he says there. There is no magic transformation that occurs. And that's rather like the magic earth theory that gets talked about among the nationalist community. It's a sort of magic earth that we have within our country, so that whenever a foreigner sets foot upon that magic earth, he suddenly turns into the same people as the ones that were originally living on that earth. And of course, that's not true. They effectively might be given citizenship. They might, for instance, be a British citizen. But that does not mean they are a part of the British people. It's a difference between citizenship and ethnicity. And just because somebody comes into a new country, it doesn't make them a part of that country's people. If I was to go to Japan and get Japanese citizenship, it would not make me Japanese. I would be a British man with Japanese citizenship. And I don't think the Japanese even give citizenship to people who aren't Japanese. I think perhaps they may stay as guests in the country, but I don't think they get afforded the same protections as the Japanese people do. A moment later, Stephen Miller tweeted, "Democrats have spent the last year demanding that every invader have a multi-year trial prior to removal, unlimited access to appeals, endless defences against removal, an automatic habeas release from ICE detention. The only process invaders are due is deportation." And this word invader, this is commonly now being used by politicians. When I was having my trial 2.5 years back, because I had referred to illegal immigrants as invaders, and I had referred to mass immigration as an invasion, I was being told that I was inciting hate against them. And that very same week, the current Home Secretary of the Times, Suella Braverman, had referred to it as an invasion. And it's since then that it has been referred to as that. And now we see in America, it's being referred to as an invasion. And of course, when you say that, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're talking about people invading with weapons. What you're drawing attention to there is the number of people. And we have more people turning up in a year in Britain now than turned up during 1066 and the invasion of William the Conqueror, the last invasion that we actually had in Britain. There's more people that turn up every year just as a part of the government's immigration process. So that's the reason why it is referred to as an invasion. And I think if it is referred to as that, then you could legitimately defend yourself against the invasion, such as in America. You could have, say, for instance, guards stationed on the wall there with weapons, and if somebody tried to break in, they could shoot them. I think in America, if somebody tries to break into your house, you could shoot them. And perhaps that's the sort of thing that will need to be done. Hopefully it won't need to be done. Hopefully people don't need to be shot at to deter them from breaking in to a country. But I guess it's more simple to do that because you can fire shots in the air in America rather than the problem that we have in Britain. If you have people that are trying to come in by boat and you say you shoot at the boat sinks and you could end up killing people. You could end up with people drowning. I mean, that's the problem that we have. I mean, people will always say, well, Britain is an island. We never had this problem before because an island is the easiest to defend because you're on the land and the invaders are in the sea. But that way of looking at it, you're going to drown the people that are trying to invade you. And we don't necessarily wish to drown illegal immigrants. We just wish to deter them. And in the States, you could just show that you have weapons and fire them in the air. And I should imagine that would deter people from trying to break in. And this isn't necessarily too over the top, because I think they do this at the border between Africa and Spain, that little part of Spain that's actually on the African continent. People are always trying to break in across the border there. So they have to use force to prevent people from actually breaking in the same way that you would use force to prevent people from breaking into your home. Of course, in Britain, if you use force to break someone, to stop someone breaking into your home, you could end up being jailed for it. So that is a difference between over here and the United States. Progressives, liberals, and Democrats slammed Miller's comments as collective punishment. spotlighting their legalistic courtroom-style view of migrants and their impact on society. But hang on a minute, is it collective punishment? Surely it's just protecting the people that are already here from coming to harm. I mean, what's happened here is you've had this Afghan refugee who has ended up shooting people. But what the opposing side is saying is, well, that's okay. We'll just have to put up with them shooting some people because it would be collective punishment to stop them all from coming in. And that's not a very good argument, is it? Because if you prevented them from coming in, if these Afghans had been prevented from coming into Britain, those people would still be alive now. And surely any sensible person would prefer there to be some kind of collective punishment, as in not allowing people to come into the country, if it was going to save just one person from being killed. I mean, how many people have to be killed before you accept that perhaps we are going to have to stop these people from coming in, and we're going to have to not look at it as collective punishment, but as sensible defensive measures to protect our own people from coming to harm? Stephen Miller endorsing collective punishment, just like the Nazis. If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, said social media user KenPW97070. And that's always what the left resort to, isn't it, is calling their enemies Nazis. I really don't think the American administration, with its support for Israel, could really be compared to the Nazis in any sensible way whatsoever. This is just being used as an insult. Pro-migration progressives also insist that the Afghan had been vetted by investigators, as if a legal process would override the migrant's personal, cultural, religious, and political baggage. And I would say that somebody from Afghan, after being occupied, or somebody from Afghanistan rather, after having been occupied for quite some years by a foreign nation, is going to have a grudge against that foreign nation, aren't they? So regardless of whether they had been vetted or not, and whatever the vetting showed up, if somebody had a grudge against America and they knew that they could get in by claiming to be a refugee, or they would just make certain that all the documents that were going to be looked at would say, oh yes, we support America, we love America. Whereas quite clearly there are going to be Afghans who do not love America after being occupied by them. Just look at the way the Palestinians hate the Israelis after being occupied by Israel for a certain number of years. Would Israel allow Palestinians to come into Israel as refugees? Of course they wouldn't. Regardless of how vetted they are, because they know that they would pose a threat to them. And you've got the same thing here. You've got Afghans coming into America and coming into Britain after being occupied by both America and Britain. So they're quite clearly going to have a grudge against them. You can't look at these people as individuals if the result of looking at them as individuals is that individuals of your own group are going to end up dead. And if they don't end up dead, perhaps they could end up raped. I don't know if we'll get a chance to look at this other article today, but I've got some articles on the disproportionate amount of rape that goes on with Afghan refugees as well. Maybe we'll get into that today, or maybe we'll get into that tomorrow. The Wall Street Journal joined the Progressive Caucus as it worried that many Afghan shoppers, renters and workers might be ejected from the nation's consumer economy. Now, if you look at Afghanistan, most of Afghanistan is not really that far out of, I guess, the Bronze Age. They're still walking around in sandals. I don't mean this in an insulting way. It's just that they are an agrarian sort of society, aren't they? Hunter-gatherers. I think a lot of them still live in tents. So how many of them that come over to America as refugees are then going to be shoppers, renters and workers? I would expect them to be getting benefits and to have the housing provided for them, the same as happens in Britain with Afghan refugees. They have everything provided for them. Okay, you might get the rare one that has been to Kabul University and is highly intelligent, and perhaps they are working in high-powered jobs. But I suspect that there would probably only be about 10% of them at the maximum. Probably only 1% of them that have university degrees, and probably 10% of them that are able to work and are working, but the others, I should imagine, they would have great difficulty fitting in with American society, especially when you consider that in Afghanistan, all the women are covered by burqas. I mean, an Afghan male that comes into America is going to be constantly distracted by the sight of women that he's never seen before, unveiled women. It's going to be more than a distraction to some of them. It's going to be too much for them, and they're going to end up abusing women, molesting women, which is why we have this massive increase in sex crime that is related to Afghan refugees. Getting back to this article here, Wall Street Journal said the reason for his alleged turn from partner to terrorist, especially as a husband and father of five in the US, is an important question to answer. The FBI will be looking for links to a domestic terror cell or international contacts, though he might simply have been disgruntled on his own about his adopted country. Tens of thousands are building new lives here in peace and are contributing to their communities. They shouldn't be blamed for the violent act of one man. Collective punishment of all Afghans in the US won't make America safer, and it might embitter them even more against the United States. Well, if you think you've got 10,000 sweets in a jar, and one of those sweets might kill 10 people by eating those sweets, is it worth having that jar of sweets, or would you just say, no, I'm not going to chance it. I'm not going to chance having any of those sweets because they might kill people. And that's the logic that's being said here. It's being said that because there are 10,000 Afghans here that haven't actually killed anyone, we can't stop any more from coming in, even though there's a chance that well, from the statistics here, we can say that one in 10,000 are going to go on a shooting rampage and kill American citizens. I mean, even if one American citizen dies as a result of a policy of the government, then that policy should not be enacted, should it? Unless it brings, or you could say, unless it brings vast benefits that outweigh the harm. But just how many benefits could somebody bring that would make up for having five of your people dead? I mean, I'm not quite sure how many people died in this atrocity. Two or three, maybe, or two or three are on life support, and one of them has died already. I mean, what about the families of these men that have been attacked? Are they going to say, well, it's worth my husband losing his life just so that these other Afghans can stay here and go shopping? That's the argument that's being put here. Progressives also use their demand for courtroom-style immigration debates to obscure their unpopular political goals. Miller has given Democrats a gift, a way of tying the defence of immigrant rights with a broader defence of constitutional norms, the editor of the far-left The Nation magazine wrote in October. With the Trump White House on the defensive, it will be foolish for Democrats to avoid attacking. But many Democrats also shed the legalistic defence of migrants to argue that the destructive migrants are worth the benefits, including more Democrat-leaning voters, a broader economy, and the imposition of chaotic diversity. There you go. So it's worth having people being shot dead just because we might get some more voters on the left. That's the argument there. There's never been an experiment like this where you have people from every corner of the globe show up in one place, former President Obama said on October 16th. We say, based on these ideals, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, and a constitution and a bill of rights and a democracy, that we can somehow figure out how to get along and maintain our private beliefs and pray to God in our own ways and retain aspects of the cultures that we bring from wherever it is that we're coming from, and yet still decide that we are all Americans and try to make it better for each successive generation. So anybody that just arrives in America is then an American. And the problem here is, well, I mean, it's a bit of a long topic to get into, isn't it? But the self-evident truths there that all men are created equal, black men were not a part of American society. They were not considered citizens. That's why it said all men are created equal, because what that meant was that you had Europeans from different countries in Europe who were all white, and when they came to America, they were all equal to each other as they were white, regardless of what country they came from. They were equal to one another. And if you include black men in that, then you can't say all men are equal because one man is white and the other man is black. And it's a difference. And I'm talking about ethnicity there, not just color of skin. They're a different race. What is self-evident there is that a black man can never be equal to a white man, meaning a black man can never be the same as a white man because he's a black man. If you want to get technical, and I'm not using this word in a derogatory sense, I'm just using it in a technical sense. You can say that one is a Negro and one is a Caucasian. So they're not equal to one another. They are different to one another. So therefore, this truth that all men are created equal, that can only mean when you're talking about white men or when you're talking about black. You could say all black men are created equal to one another. Or you could say all white men are created equal to one another. But you couldn't say all black men and white men are created equal to each other because they're not. Our eyes tell us that they're not. They're different creatures altogether. I think George W. Bush believed that it is possible. I know John McCain believed it. I know Mitt Romney believed it. Obama added. President Trump, however, argues that the inflow of unproductive migrants from backwards countries is deeply damaging to Americans, saying on November 27th, patriotic American citizens who, because of their beautiful hearts, do not want to openly complain or cause trouble in any way, shape or form. They put up with what has happened to our country, but it's eating them alive to do so. As an example, hundreds of thousands of refugees from Somalia are completely taking over the once great state of Minnesota. Somalian gangs are roving the streets looking for prey, as our wonderful people stay locked in their apartments and houses, hoping against hope that they will be left alone. Even as we have progressed technologically, immigration policy has eroded those gains and living conditions for many. I will permanently pause migration from all third world countries to allow the US system to fully recover, terminate all of the millions of Biden illegal admissions, and remove anyone who is not a net asset to the United States or is capable of loving our country. I will end all federal benefits and subsidies to non-citizens of our country, denaturalize migrants who undermine domestic tranquility, and deport any foreign national who is a public charge, security risk, or non-compatible with Western civilization. Well, these are very noble words, and I hope that he actually does this. Or is this just bluster after this terrible atrocity taking place? These goals will be pursued with the aim of achieving a major reduction in illegal and disruptive populations. Only reverse migration can fully cure this situation, Trump wrote. So we've got him actually talking about re-migration there, which is this word that people have been working for quite some time to get this word into the mainstream and used by the mainstream. And now we actually have Trump referring to reverse migration, re-migration, and it's capitalized here as well. So he's making a big point of actually saying this. But when he talks about only people that are actually a net asset to the country, I mean, is anybody that comes to another country, are they a net asset? Because quite clearly their loyalty is going to be to their own people, and they may well work there, but the money that they have is going to go to their people, isn't it? The wages that they earn goes to their family. It doesn't go to another American family. It goes to their own family, and it looks after them. So how can they actually be an asset to the people that are already in the country? They're an asset to their own people, aren't they? If you've got an Afghan that moves to America with a family of 10, and he gets a job, and he gets a good job, he's got the money that he earns is going to go on his family, on those 10 Afghans. And that job that he has isn't going to go to an American person. And that American person isn't going to earn that money, is he? And you could make the argument that we have more jobs than we have people, but I don't think that is the case. What we have is we have companies that wish to pay lower wages to people. So they import, want to see people imported from abroad that will actually work for lower wages than the people of their own country will work for. And this leads to this argument that immigrants are needed to do the jobs that our people refuse to do. That's not the case, though, because if our people were paid enough money to do those jobs, then they would do those jobs. And we have an issue with work not paying enough to get by on, paying very little more than benefits. And that's not to say, well, we should stop benefits, because benefits are only just enough so that people can get by on them. It's only just enough to pay the bills and to pay for your food. There's not a lot left on top of that. What it is that the working jobs, the working pay, that needs to be increased. And I would suggest a way of increasing that would be to have some form of universal basic income that everybody got. And then when you worked, you didn't get that universal basic income taken away from you. When you worked, it was added to that. And if you did that, you'd have more money in circulation. You would have more money that would be spent on local goods. And it would actually help people rather than bailing out the banks so that their spreadsheets add up and the money doesn't actually go anywhere. Surely you would be better off actually giving a smaller amount of money actually to the citizens of a country so that they could afford to go out and work and make it so that it was worth them going out to do so. It's a big problem that we have in Britain, that you don't earn enough money when you're working to make it worth you not getting benefits, because private rents are so high. All your money is just going to go on rent and electricity bills, gas bills, food bills, phone bills. And at the end of it, you're going to have very little on top of that in order to save up or buy the things that you want to buy, because everything just costs so much now. I mean, another thing, which is actually not really relevant to this topic today, but something that I wanted to bring up, was over in Britain, they've now stopped this two-child cap on child benefit. Originally, in Britain, whatever child, however many number of children you had, you got extra benefit for that child. And then they stopped it. They said, oh, we'll only allow you to have two children. Any more than that, and you're not going to get any money. And now the Labour Party reversed that. And people are saying, oh, well, this is terrible, because the only people who have more than two children are ethnic minorities. So they're just going to be given more money to have more children. But I don't support that view. I think that's cutting off your nose to spite your face. I think they are better off taking off this two-child cap, because if you do have white families that have more than two children, it's going to make life easier for them. If you keep that cap there, then it's going to make life more difficult for them. Okay, yes, it makes life a little bit easier for ethnic minority families as well. But surely it's better to have more white children there and more ethnic minority children there than less white children there and still the same number of ethnic minority children. Ethnic minorities are still going to have lots of children. As I say, I think it's cutting off your nose to spite your face to say, well, we shouldn't have this two-child benefit cap, because Muslim families, for instance, are likely to have large families. And you've got to come up with some way to encourage white people to have children. And if a side effect of that is it also encourages ethnic minorities to have children, well, you just have to accept that. Obviously, the best way to do it is in Hungary, where they encourage ethnic Hungarians to have children, and they have lots of policies in place to increase the fertility rate. But I think there would be issues here if the British government was to say, well, we're only going to give child benefit to the ethnically British, because of course then they would be accused of racism, wouldn't they? But in actual fact, all they would be doing is trying to redress this imbalance that is there between white people who have a replacement rate of somewhere around 1.6 and ethnic minorities who have a replacement rate that is much higher. I think if you look at some of these African countries, they have an average of 8 children to a family, whereas ethnically British family has less than 2. But as I say, this is positive news, what Trump is saying about this, and the fact that he's bringing up reverse migration. and that his top advisor is also saying these things. But how long they last for, how long this stop in migration lasts for, that's anybody's guess, isn't it, really? Hopefully it will last for some time. And he didn't just mean we'll pause it for a few weeks. But anyway, thank you very much for listening today. We'll get into these Afghan news articles tomorrow. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.